Baron Ron Heron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pielo Fon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And it's been a long time since we've been on the air. It's been almost a month because of the fire, and I'm glad everyone is safe and everybody is here. In fact, our guests today are from CSU Channel Islands. Two of the guests are graduates, recent graduates from the Environmental Science and Resource Department. And we have Sean Anderson here. Dr. Anderson is a professor in the Environmental Science and Resource Management Department, and he is a former guest. So I'd like to introduce not only Sean, but also Amanda Shepherd and Andy Sperker, who are recent graduates.
Thank you. I'm going to clap for them because I'm very excited they graduated and they're gainfully employed. Yeah.
So, you know, before we get into all the good stuff that you're doing as recent graduates of CSU Channel Islands, what about the fire? We talk about the environment. What is the implications for this community because of the fire?
Huge, huge. I mean, the first thing to say is that We live in an area that has fire as a natural part of its history and the evolution of our plant communities and all that kind of stuff. But what we saw with this fire and what we're seeing with fires all across the western U.S. is really not something new in the fact of fires come in, but magnitude has really, really changed. So with this particular fire, we've seen this is the largest fire in recorded human history, which starts in 1932 in California. There's some earlier records, but the record keeping was very spotty back then. And also because of the way fires were routinely around, we probably never had a fire this large in our history. So this is stressing infrastructure type stuff. It's changing businesses. So in particular, not only is it having the ecological effects and all this and that, it also hit us during the prime season for most of our retail folks. So we're going to see a lot of impact in terms of business viability and stuff like that. And then we are into this now cycle, right, where we have the fires first and then we have mudslides next. So we're next moving into mudslide time. And then there's all kinds of other ecological effects that are a little bit harder for people to see. But we've been doing, for example, monitoring of wildlife in Santa Barbara, Ventura, and LA counties for over the past decade. And we're starting to develop some understanding of what the fires do to the animal populations. In particular, it nukes the little guys. Bunnies are really heavily hurt, voles, mice, stuff like that. Bigger critters are generally okay. The deer and the mountain lion are generally okay. We've had a mountain lion that had burned paws that is getting treatment right now in Ojai. But losing those critters has all kinds of long-term consequences for how energy cycles in our system and all that kind of good stuff.
Is there any good news?
There's all kinds of good news.
No, but is it? Everyone. You know, the thing I learned in high school was that fires rejuvenate.
Sure.
And so, is there some biological benefit here?
Absolutely. I mean, there's biological and human benefit. So one, most of the critters that we have evolved with this, and so for a lot of our plants to complete their life cycle, they need this fire, they need smoking, or they need heat. So that's going to help out. But we started in the early 1900s. We started this artificial program, this program of fire suppression.
You don't look that old.
My belly looks like it's that old, and my hairline looks like it's that old, but. So we started this fire suppression system. What we did was we basically stopped a lot of the small fires and we allowed a lot of fuel to build up, whether that's in forests, whether that's in chaparral, coastal sage scrub, what have you. And so what this fire did was come in and take out a whole bunch of that. So one thing that's going to allow new species to come in, more diversity. The challenge is if we have the right amount of rain, if we have the right amount of moisture, those guys can pop back. If we have this drought situation like we have going on, that's a problem. But one thing I'll say just real quick before we get on to something else is there's also other interesting things we're learning. So we're using some of our drones to map the area behind different places, but one is the area right behind the Ventura City Hall. And we've discovered all kinds of really cool structures that nobody had known about that were from the Mission era, that were built by the folks when they built the Mission, that were part of the food production system, et cetera. And so we've been using our drones to really, you know, sub-meter, very accurately map where all these walls were, where all these structures were, so that whether even if they're buried a little bit by a little bit of mud or rainfall in the next couple weeks or by some of the erosion control measures, come spring, our archaeological colleagues can go out and actually start to excavate those and actually get a better understanding of what was going on in the Mission time back in, you know, 1700s or so.
A friend of mine told me a story last night that his friend owns a small vineyard up in Napa, and everything around him burned, mm-hmm. but not where the grapes were. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure out why, you know, whether it was extra irrigation or whether mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. the grapes or whether mm-hmm. it was that, you know, religiously, you know, the higher powers like to drink wine, whatever.
Probably all the above.
Whatever. But there, you know, there's some interesting possibilities for research here about.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, we are evolving into something, a different place. And so we can complain and moan and say, oh, my God, it's horrible. Or we can actually pull up our boots or whatever the analogy is, pull something up and actually start to deal with this as adults. And some of this we'll be able to fix. Other things we're going to have to learn how to adapt to it. And so by following what happens with this very closely and monitoring the progress in the wake of this, we can help to better prepare ourselves for the next time.
Okay, now, you said we should act like adults. We're not going to bring politics into this. Okay, so Amanda and Andy your capstone project, or equivalent of a capstone project, was your native garden project. And, you know, tell us a little bit about how that came about and what it was.
So we actually created out in the Channel Islands National Park Service. We created a native garden. It's a drought-tolerant, public awareness do-it-yourself garden. The whole idea behind it was for the public to be able to go here, look what it looks like to have plants year-round, plants that brown, plants that bloom at certain times of the year, and be okay with that color change throughout the time.
And this is native being the Chumash native, or this is just native for what was there? And this is just for the Channel Islands?
It's Mediterranean native garden. Okay. So there's plants that you're going to find that are on the Channel Islands, but we also mixed it with plants that are going to be found in the local area. So everything in that garden we designed specifically that you're able to buy within a certain radius of the area. Mm. So everything's accessible to the public.
And is that relevant to the water problems here in town, that if this type of garden uses less water?
Yeah, it is. So we have a special system where it's basically a drain system or pipe system that collects rainwater that comes off of the roof. And then we collect it all in the pipe system, and it goes into a French drain, and it can pump back into the actual garden. It's reusable. So
is the school using this as an educational platform for future students? Or this is something that's just going to stand there and be pretty?
So the whole idea is actually an educational for not just the school, but for the whole community. You can go into the garden, and we have signs that tell you how to do this in your own house, how to go about, how to find these plants, and IDing specific plants within the garden.
So you can buy these plants?
Oh, you can buy everything you mm-hmm. see.
And you say, so this is not on the Channel Islands. This is at the campus?
At the Channel Islands National Park Service in Ventura Harbor.
Yeah,
the visitor center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But just to highlight one quick thing that maybe these guys didn't make as clear. A lot of times when you go to these gardens, it's some very fancy, rare mm-hmm. plant that was collected and then cultivated, and it takes a real botanical expert to get these guys to grow. That's not what these guys did. These guys got stuff that's accessible to everybody that's listening to this right now. They can go down to their local stores. You don't have to have a special catalog order. You don't have to have a special whatever. It's all within the realm of everybody listening.
Okay, and the incentive to do this is not just that it's pretty, not just that you can tell your friends it's native. Is there an environmental benefit to having a garden like this?
Yeah, I mean, a huge thing is what we like to say, it's the three B's. You know, you get native birds, bees, and butterflies in your garden, which everyone loves to see. And when you plant these native plants in these native habitats, that's the first visitors that come out there.
You're making a corridor so the animals and species can pass through the city without getting really affected.
And are you getting the word out to the community that this is something you should go look at and maybe replicate?
Yeah. I mean, we have we had a public forum about a month ago out there for the opening, and we're actually having a website come out in the next few weeks to a month, and it's going to outline how to do the whole thing yourself.
Yeah. It probably would make sense to have a seminar for gardeners to teach them how to introduce this to clients.
Yeah, it's very achievable. I mean, anyone can do it, just a little bit of time.
Yeah. I like the two bees. Not the three bees, because I'm allergic to bees. So I want the lesser garden.
Understandable.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear from humble beginnings in 1973. Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Amanda Shepherd and Andy Sperker, who are recent graduates from CSU Channel Islands, and a return guest, Dr. Sean Anderson, who is a professor in the Environmental Science and Resource Management Department at CSU Channel Islands. AHA is a teen program. And, you know, this is an area that I would imagine, not just because it would be interesting to teach teens about this, but it would be good to start with at a young age. And we've made an arrangement with CSU Channel Islands to bring our teens over in the spring. We've got funding, and they're going to go over and spend a weekend there, which should be very interesting, because this is something
cool.
The earlier you learn it, the better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So during the break, we were talking about, which shows you we're really boring, this group. We were talking about mulch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mulch. And so here's my question. I heard right after the fire that while the ash and the particulates are not very healthy, it's good mulch, and therefore, once you clean it up, you should probably leave it on your garden. Is that true? Is ash from a burn good mulch?
So we were actually talking about this before, and we were saying that, I mean, it depends how much you're getting, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we were speaking earlier, these are fire-adapted plants. You know, they're used to this cycle, mm-hmm. and that's the whole point of getting this native garden. We want plants that are used to this kind of mm-hmm. occurrence. So I would say a little bit's not going to hurt.
For some plants, like say people have citrus, say in their yard, they actually need some of that potassium. So ash is actually something they routinely would probably add to make sure they have, like say, the fruit as flavorful as they'd like to have it. So a little bit, yes. It also is going to depend on what generated the ash. If you had trees out behind your house and they burnt, you're probably fine. If you had plastic lawn furniture and stuff, maybe not so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I... I don't know what we had because it came from it came from afar. That was the problem. You don't know where it's, you know, whether it was, you know, a flower that was burning or asbestos from a car, from an old car down the road.
Right. Although most of what we were getting from across Santa Barbara into Ventura was coming from this huge wildland fire. So the large fraction of that is going to be plant generated. Yeah. If you were, you know, more in the middle of Ventura and you got some stuff, maybe some of the stuff on the edge was coming in with some junk, but by and large, most of the stuff is going to be fine.
Yeah, and in Montecito, it was too expensive for the poor ash to come in.
They didn't get a permit?
They're very restrictive there in Montecito. So Amanda and Andy, this is not your typical passion among people your age. How did you guys get involved in thinking that this would be fun?
So it started about a year ago.
Yeah,
you're looking at her like you don't have an answer.
It's just molded into so much more than we thought it was going to be. But it started about a year ago, and we were working with Channel Islands Restoration. And
well, you were.
It was a local consulting firm.
Consulting firm. And then one of their master gardeners, Kelly Green, does the National Park Service garden.
It's a great name.
Perfect for one day. And she does the gardening for the Park Service out there. And she wanted to redo this garden at the front of the visitor center. And I've known her for about a year or so. I've been working with her. And she said she wanted to make a student-driven thing. And that's when I approached Amanda and Professor Sean over here. And we were able to get some school credits for it. And that's when we started to design it, early January.
So, but both of you are were students of the Environmental Science and Resource Management Department?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is not a stretch then. This is considered to be part of environmental.
Mm-hmm.
So are there other students that are involved in the whole aspect of plants and gardening?
Amanda was able to get the volunteers along.
Yeah, I just went and talked to a couple of my friends in the program, and they also found connections. It's honestly just all about talking to each other. And I got a lot of people who were in the introduction classes to environmental science, so they could get some service learning credit. So... Mm-hmm.
So we have a strong focus on community-based work and also on service learning. So a lot of our classes have a requirement that students have to do something outside of the classroom to get a decent grade. And so these guys targeted our students in our introductory class that folks hadn't made up their mind yet. So they didn't know if they want to work on plants or if they want to work on animals or air quality or this or that. So it was a wonderful opportunity, not just for people that are interested in it, but for people that might have been interested in sort of their first toe in the water kind of opportunity.
And, you know, given the politics, I said I wouldn't mention politics, but you can't help it when you're talking about the environment. Have young people become more interested or less interested? Has the negativity of some politicians about the lack of need for considering the environment as opposed to business growth, has that turned people off or has it turned people on to fight it?
I think it's sparked it, if anything. I think it's really pushed younger generations and the current generation, younger one, to go into the environmental field and to fight to keep what we have, if not more.
Yeah, because I haven't really noticed a decline. I've just noticed a lot of people around our age
or
younger
more people
who are interested.
So what else did you study? When you had a four-year program, and so besides plants, what are the other subjects in the environmental area that you studied?
So we learn a lot of different habitats around the area. So we're lucky to live in a Mediterranean climate, which is very rare for around here and, around the world, basically. There's only, maybe 6 or 7 Mediterranean climates. And we're really cool because we got a lot of different habitats we could look at. So we looked at chaparral environments, wetlands, riparians. Channel Islands, those are so unique and they're really fun to look at.
Work and being in the environmental science program at Channel Islands, it's really an all-encompassing kind of program.
Does it include biology?
It does. Yes. I mean, more than I would say the average person would think. It's biology, it's chemistry, it's mathematics.
So it's
economics.
Not a walk in the park, literally. It's more than walking through the park.
That's how most of us got inspired, is a walk in the park, maybe.
I mean, if you're good at it, you kind of strive for it. So. Yeah, it just becomes kind of easy and second nature. And like Andy said, there's all those different cool aspects you could take into, but you could also do electronics. So we're using the ROVs and the drones. Mm-hmm. And then also we're using computers. So we're looking at GIS where we can map stuff.
So I have a question. Is this true? I went to South Africa, and I went to Cape Town, and I went to the Botanical Gardens in Cape Town, and what they told us there, when we told them we were from Santa Barbara, they said we have exactly the same position on the Earth upside down than you do, and you're looking, this could be the Santa Barbara.
It is. It is. It looks exactly the same.
But that's an interesting, I mean, I don't know what to do with that fact, but it's really interesting.
You know, well, it's a very popular place to live too, right? Mediterranean, Chile, South Africa, the tip of South Africa, California. They're people flock to these places because they're nice, good temperature, great plants, great wines, all that kind of stuff is a real attractant.
Well, I was thinking though the reality of not of how nice it is to live, but I'm talking about from the plant standpoint.
Absolutely, same thing.
The environment really matters.
So a lot of our weeds come from South Africa or the Mediterranean. A lot of our plants have become weeds in South Africa because they're so easily interswitched.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess we'll also call it the ESRM program.
That's there you go. ESRM. That's what we call.
So besides this area, there are other specialties as well, aren't there?
Yeah. So we're the most interdisciplinary department on campus, except for liberal studies, which doesn't really have a particular focus. But so our students have to take econ, they have to take biology, like these guys said, chemistry. And so our whole goal is to produce these guys, as these guys are great examples of, once they graduate, they're ready to be employed. They don't have to then spend a year of additional training, learn about this law. They know about the law. They don't have to learn how to fly drones. They know how to fly drones. They don't have to learn how to make maps. They've been making maps for years, kind of thing.
And that really, I would say, going off that, just helps us to really communicate better and to the public about the environment, on the environmental issues. It really trained us on how to negotiate, be open-minded, and all-rounded to everyone.
But are there jobs on a national basis? I know you both have jobs, but is this, because I know it's a popular program across the country, are there jobs today?
Oh, totally. So another one of our students just got hired. So now one of the biggest sources of, or biggest employers is Silicon Valley. So another one of our students just got hired and is moving up to San Francisco or moved up this week or next week or something.
To do what?
Work in a drone company because we train them how to use drones. Most people don't give students the opportunity to learn all the stuff. Amanda knows how to do 3D printing. Mm-hmm. She's driving robots underneath the ocean. And this is not an engineering program, right? We're a field science-based program. But yet all this very practical skill set turns into highly marketable skills for these guys.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank & Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank & Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Amanda Shepherd and Andy Sperker, recent graduates of Channel Islands, Cal State Channel Islands, in the Environmental Science and Resource Management Department, and their professor, Dr. Sean Anderson. So we were talking at the break, and I shouldn't admit this, but we're talking about growing marijuana. And
Theoretically growing marijuana.
And, you know, one of the incentives is, I don't know if the statistic is right, but for a square foot of plantable indoor space, a tulip is 1/60th the value of a marijuana plant. So there's a big economic incentive to plant marijuana. But apparently there are environmental issues with growing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To say nothing of the smell. That. So what do you do about that? I mean, obviously marijuana is going to be a factor in not gardening, in industrial production, in communities all over California. Is that an environmental issue we should be concerned about?
So we started looking at this two falls ago when we had the ballot measure, and reporters started calling us looking for some perspective on what the environmental impact of growing pot is. And we don't. It's a little hard since it's been illegal previously, so people haven't been super forthcoming with what exactly how they've been doing it. But anecdotally and talking to various folks unofficially, there's some potentially huge downsides for how marijuana was produced before it became legal. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that we typically think of is illegal operations in national parks and things like that, where mostly it has been done by gangs from Mexico and South America that don't care about the environment. So they've been using nasty pesticides. We have a huge problem with some of our rare animals, especially in Central and Northern California, that are getting poisoned by some of the rat poisons, et cetera. All kinds of traps and things like that that people set that, since it's illegal, they want to stop people from walking these farms. So there's all those negative sides of that. Also, a huge amount of water is taken up to grow these things. So when I first went up to Stanford and started working on my postdoc, which was in the hills behind Stanford, found all kinds of water diversions from our creek that were going to illegal pot farms in the channel there. So there's all kinds of that negative downside. But if we leave that aside and we just talk about the regular agricultural production, you don't need anywhere near the level of pesticides you need for something like, say, cotton or other crops. Mm-hmm. What's also become very clear what's happening is I think when some people voted to legalize marijuana for recreational use, the notion was, hey, we'll start using this and it'll be great and people start growing in their backyards. What's actually happened is this is big business. This is not small-scale production, mm-hmm. little mom and pop growing 20 plants behind their house. It's major scale. So a lot of the growth has happened in northern L.A. County and in the Central Valley where folks have bought out, for example, old prisons. And they're actually doing the growing with hydroponics inside the prison. So a lot of this
ironic,
is being,
isn't it?
Yeah. So it's not in the ground, but they have these secure facilities, so nobody can break in and steal all their ganj, and very different production, very different scales than I think how most people have conceived of it. So we'll have to see how it evolves. But just straight up hemp, say for fiber or t-shirts or something like that, compared to something like cotton, a traditional crop, way less impacts from the marijuana cultivation.
Well, I have one thing in common with former President Clinton. I never inhaled. So, Amanda, you didn't wake up in the morning when you were 5 years old, did you, saying, I want to be an environmental scientist? What was the motivation? What got you interested?
Okay. So I actually started with wanting to become a medical examiner, so totally different field. I actually didn't really like staying inside. I want to be outside and outdoors, and I want to help give back to the environment and to the community. So once I took the intro to ESRM class at Channel Islands, I just fell in love with the program.
So this started at college. When you were a junior high school and high school, this was not something that...
Oh, no. I had no idea what I was going to do in high school.
Okay.
So...
What about you?
So I grew up in Sonoma County, and I was about 20 minutes from the Redwoods. And I just... I always backpacked. I hiked out there my whole life, and I just loved being outside. But I actually, too, went into Channel Islands as a business major. And I didn't have anything on my radar until I took the intro class, and it just really kind of changed my mind on what I wanted to do. I wanted to give back, which I think is a huge thing in the ESRM program, is a lot of the students want a career that that will give back to the community and for generations to come. And that's just, that was one great way to do it.
I don't think I've met any person in that program who wants to make profit out of something. Yeah. So, I mean, if you go on this program, you have to expect to not make profit. It's about giving back.
So we're what people call a discovery major. So we have this weird name. It's not even environmental studies or environmental science. It's environmental science and resource management. And people think, what the heck's that? I don't know what that is. So we don't get that, although more and more every year, but we don't get that many students coming in saying, I want to be an ESR major. They're like, these guys, they take one of our classes. They come with me to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. They take our introduction to drones class.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Come with you. That's a non sequitur. Come with you to New Orleans?
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
So
is that the heart
of
environmental science?
Right. Amanda went to Hawaii. Yeah.
We both went to Hawaii.
So when my family, my son's in the background over there, Gabriel's over there. So when my family moved down from the Bay Area to when we were starting this campus, very soon after Hurricane Katrina happened. And so, long story short, I ended up taking a class with us to just help. So our students that and these guys will tell you, most of our students are working at least a little bit to pay for school. Some work almost full-time to pay for school. Nevertheless, across campus, our students raised about $15,000 and donated it to the American Red Cross that December. And they turned around and they said, okay, you said the first thing to do in a disaster is to send money. And we did that. And okay, great. But now we want to actually physically go and help. And you know about wetlands and you know about, you know, the coastal zone and everything. So you should take us to Louisiana. And I was thinking, what the hell are you talking about, man? And so I went and checked out with some friends that are there and thought we could do this. And so since then, every year we've been bringing students. So this is a 4-credit class. School pays for it. These guys' fees pay for it. So the model that we have is the students pay 1/3 the trip cost. School pays 2/3 of the trip cost. So it's still expensive, but it puts it within the realm of possibility for these guys. So New Orleans is not quite a 2-week class, but we also have classes to Costa Rica. We also have classes to the Cook Islands. Last year, these guys came with us in an experimental trip to Hawaii. So the idea is to not just – because we're not just a community-based university that has a focus on that or service learning. We also have an international multicultural focus. So we believe it's really important to get these guys out beyond California. Well, one, we focus on California, but get them beyond and let's see Louisiana. Let's see these other places. So in the case of Louisiana, we used to spend half our time rebuilding homes. Now we spend half our time installing food gardens in poor neighborhoods. The other half of the time we work on restoring wetlands just south of the city of New Orleans. And so, and then whenever we're not doing that, we meet with jazz musicians, Pulitzer Prize winners, chefs, business leaders, all kinds of folks, lieutenant governor, all kinds of folks come and talk with the students, and we embed them in the culture of South Louisiana. And it's open to anybody across campus. So the organizing principle is, why did Katrina happen the way it did? And then why did the recovery happen the way it's happened? So we have sociology majors, nursing majors, everybody's in there. And people take different takes on it. They take social justice takes. They take business development, government, all kinds of stuff. So that's one of our classes.
And why don't we see more of that in Puerto Rico? Why is Puerto Rico left to wallow in its disaster? Isn't it interesting that, you know, we all still care about – I'm not being critical.
Right. Since you didn't want to have politics in there, I was trying to figure out how to answer that without talking about politics. But suffice it to say, things that are – it seems to some people, things that are out of sight, out of mind, we don't care about. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons we take these guys to these places, in addition to teaching them and giving them the skills and awareness, is to make these things seem much more real and tangible to them. Mm-hmm. And so we go to make friends, and we go to help out. We do not do pity stuff. We don't do that at all. And I think sometimes with what's gone on with the Puerto Rico story is sometimes, oh, those poor people, it's so sad for those. They have such a screwed up economy and this and that. As opposed to saying, hey, these are our brothers and sisters. Let's get out there and let's fix this power. Let's get them some love and some help. Mm-hmm. That hasn't happened so much. Let's see, how do I say this? Correctly. So this hasn't happened so much because maybe they look different than some of us, and maybe they seem like they see the world slightly differently than we do, and so therefore that they have not been a priority.
You know, on a more positive note, getting you off the hook here, it's so interesting that UCSB, which is, you know, 20 miles away, mm-hmm. 30 miles away, has a very good program as well. So we have two really first-class mm-hmm. schools in an area that, you know, over the whole country is probably not a big deal, but here we have two of the best
places. I guess it's partly the Mediterranean environment.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a product of that. So I did my undergrad at UCSB.
Okay.
And one of my – I was a double major. One of my majors was environmental studies, which and that – so our environmental studies program there is also an awesome program, second oldest in the nation. Only Yale School of Forestry is older. And that was birthed out of the 1969 oil spill. Rod Nash and Mel Manalis and all those guys that started that program, really, it was you know, a crisis happened and let's respond. Just like our work in New Orleans, just like all of these, just like our work with the Thomas Fire. So because we work in the environment, when something happens that impacts the environment, we have the wherewithal and the skill set to go in and help. And sometimes government agencies, institutions take longer to respond. But as a bunch of students, as a bunch of professors, as a bunch of academics, we can jump in. And so a lot of times we can get a toehold in as one of the first in to respond to these problems.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers Brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers Brand Showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Amanda Shepherd and Andy Sperger, recent graduates of Cal State University at Channel Islands, and Dr. Sean Anderson, professor in the Environmental Science and Resource Management Department. And here's my question. We were talking before about UCSB. We were talking about the Environmental Studies program. Why can't you call it Environmental Studies? It's so hard to say Science and Resource Management.
Because we didn't want to. Because we were trying to do something different. We were trying to so environmental science is a you can see that in a lot of places. And so this is a traditional discipline, if you will, typically focused on things like measuring pollution in the water and stuff like that. Resource management is another traditional discipline that's mostly historically been dudes, mostly not women, mostly dudes on horseback, talking about how much forage we can make for cattle and stuff. One, a very much science-based thing. Another, very much sort of a human dimensions. How are we going to create this resource that people can use? So we were trying to very specifically blend those two things together and take this traditional science with this sort of merge with human dimensions and bake that into the fundamental part of it. Environmental studies, when I was there at UCSB, we were very much history, a policy, all that wonderful stuff, but we were very light on science. And so we've tried to sort of circumvent that by having the science merge with the human dimensions, and then have a very practical skill set focused approach to the education, the curriculum these guys take.
You're aware that this signal reaches UCSB.
Oh, I'm no. I've many friends at UCSB. As I said, I'm a happy alum. The challenge is, how do you constantly reinvent yourself? And as a brand, one of the things that is so cool about our new university is that we're young, right? We're still babies. And so you can build stuff. At my previous universities, which have all been fantastic, UCSB, UCLA, Stanford, they're all great. But they have their procedures. They have their ways of doing stuff. And when you want to do something, as is any larger organization that's been around for, it takes a while. At Channel Islands, the excitement is you could build whatever you're interested in. We think international focus is important. If you have the time and you don't have to sleep at night, you can build the policies and drones, right? We started working with drones. Our policy is now the policy that's required of all these other campuses across the state of California, because we invented the policy. And it wasn't the other people weren't interested in that or whatever, but they were just used to doing things the way they traditionally do it. So it's been a really invigorating place to work at, this California State University Channel Islands. And it's really what has allowed us to attract the talent that we've drawn from all across the country and all across the world to create these new types of programs for these guys.
You know, when I first met Erica a year and a half ago, she talked about all of the things that make Channel Islands unique. And I listened to it. She's a very good speaker. And I said, sure, I've heard this story before. And I've had like 15 guests on now. And it's true.
It is true.
It's an amazing university, and the opportunities you guys have gotten is really not only incredible because it's so good, but it's so new, and usually it takes time to get off the ground.
And it's exciting, too. I mean, the opportunities in the field that we get from all the classes, it's not just sitting at a desk, you know, looking up at the professor lecture. It's
Which is a great thing. There. Let's be clear. That's awesome. But, that's super cool.
But you get to be out there. You get to actually do the science behind what you're learning about. And I think that's one of the biggest, most impactful thing that happened on me and Amanda's.
Not only that, but you get to know your professors pretty well. And you get to, like, network through their network. So you get a lot of good connections, and you can go really far in life.
You mean when you sleep in a tent next to your professor?
Be careful.
Or, you sleep on the beach in Hawaii with your professor.
Look, just because we didn't have enough money for the hotel room, everybody had a great time sleeping on the beach, talking
Alarm
to homeless guys.
The
we met the homeless guys. We had a great conversation. We met the police. We had some great conversation with the police. Yeah. It was good.
I saw the dormitories at Santa Rosa and the kitchen. It's not bad.
Yeah, it is good.
Not bad at
it
all. Of course, you got to take the boat ride over usually. And that's a deal breaker for me.
You know, it's our station where these guys have spent a lot of time. Our station is actually a really, really key part of how our university is evolving. It is, you know, just a short boat ride away, but many of the folks we bring out, we don't just bring out our university students. We also have programs that bring out elementary school kids, high school kids, et cetera. And a lot of these folks have never camped. I mean, our students, our ESRM students, they are kind of used to being outside in general. But we're talking about an opportunity. My wife's English students, composition students come out. The art program comes out. English department comes out. All these different groups come out. And having that resource where you are a part, you're off your internet, you're off your mobile phone. For some people, it's really scary, but it's a wonderful opportunity to sort of tune out and actually think about the world, not just nature, but just think about your place in the world. So having those opportunities and those physical spaces are also really, really key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really an amazing opportunity to be in a place like that. But I wonder how many students in other places think that this is all, you know, gut programs. You know, you're going out and camping. How much of it is rigorous academia?
And so you guys, tell us about your classes.
So, I mean, I would say, I did get that a lot from people that, you know, you're just kind of hanging out there.
Right.
But no, I mean, every time I'd go out there with a class, we're working until we're sleeping. I mean, you wake up, you go out to the beach. It's fun. I mean, we're hanging out on beaches. We're hiking mountains. You know, we're going in these valleys. It's a really cool thing to do. But you're counting stuff along the whole way. You're learning something new the entire time.
One of the things that you do, which is really, I think, very important from the standpoint of having empathy and ethics, is that when you find something on Channel Islands that is related to the Chumash or that could be important to them spiritually, you save it and you I understand you'll even rebury someone that was, so you're not going in there with a heavy foot. And I think that's a good lesson. If you look at the English history in Yale, and when they went over to foreign countries to do exploration, they didn't care. Besides stealing the stuff, they, you know, just went in there like bulldozers. But you're being taught not just the science, but also the care to preserve what's important to the native people.
So our logo, or our mascot, excuse me, is the dolphin. And the dolphin isn't chosen because we're near the ocean. It partly is. But it's really because of the importance of dolphins to the Chumash people. And so when we do stuff on campus, we have, for example, this place called Round Mountain that's on our mainland campus. That's a sacred site to the Chumash. And so it's part of campus. It's state property. In theory, we can do whatever we want. We don't. We never even take a lab up there unless we first check with the tribal representatives and say, hey, is it okay to go up here? And so absolutely respecting the First Peoples is a fundamental part of what we do and are very proud to do that. When these guys go to their graduation, it's opened with a conch blowing and it's opened with a blessing from an elder. Before we go into this important ceremony for these guys, we make sure we acknowledge our forebears and our friends and partners in this endeavor.
So if I'm an economics major and I have nothing to do with your department and I'm a junior and I have coffee with these two people and I get excited, can I sign up for one of these courses, or do you have to be a major to do?
Many of our courses are open. They don't have prereqs. We also have a great minor because we're so interdisciplinary. It's really easy if you're an econ major, let's say, it's relatively easy to take only another semester or so worth of classes and get some of the key experience. So we try to make ourselves as available as possible to everybody.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we're about to go to our last segment. I can't believe it's so quick. Be back in a moment.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Amanda Shepherd and Andy Sperker, recent graduates from Cal State University Channel Islands, and Dr. Sean Anderson, a professor in the Environmental Science and Resource Management Department, otherwise known as Environmental Studies.
That was funny. That was good.
Yeah. So this sounds like a great program, but what do you do when you get out? Besides go on the radio, are there jobs out there? And what kind of jobs
are you guys gainfully employed?
Yeah, I mean, we both have jobs, you know, and it's a lot more than I think someone would think out there. You know, you can go into computer sciences with doing GIS. You can go into economics. You can go into managing the city resources, environmental planning, biology. It's just so all encompassing.
So what, tell us what you guys are doing now or what you'll be doing in the next week or so.
So I'm currently working with the Ventura County's planning department, and I've been updating the Ventura County's locally important species list. So it's based off of species that are important and viable to our county, which are unique or rare. And we basically have a committee, and we bring people together who are specialized, like botanists or with local species, and we look at the current list and also submissions that were made for proposals for species being added to the list or removed from the list, and we just discuss it, find out if they meet the two criterias for if they can be, if their extent is decreasing over historic time, or if there's five or fewer occurrences of the species out there. And then we just figure out how many are added or removed, and then we update the list and let the public know, and they get a, the public gets to have a discussion on
and then that, what that, to make. That in turn is used for planning decisions and approval of permits and things across the county of Ventura.
Mm-hmm. And Andy?
I just recently concluded some work with a nonprofit out in the Santa Monica, the conservation district, the Santa Monica Mountains. And out there, we just did a lot of field biology. We're out in the rivers, climbing through rocks and or around rocks, up rivers.
Did you get paid for this?
Yeah, I did get paid for it. I know, right? Oh, man, how bad does that sound? I got to hang out on the beach all day. But no, we did a lot of water quality. We monitored lagoons. And it was just is a really fun, all-encompassing thing that I got to do.
So,
What are you doing? What's next?
And then now I'm actually going into Ventura County, the planning department, too. And I'm actually starting that one tomorrow. So
I don't want to end the show on a down note, but but you know, the new tax law penalizes the quote-unquote blue states by making state and local taxes non-deductible. And one of the nefarious purposes behind that is not just to punish the blue states, but also to shrink the spending that some people believe is a waste mm-hmm. of money. And mm-hmm. So here's Ventura mm-hmm. hiring people like you to do some really wonderful stuff. But if the push comes to shove, there's a risk that that gets cut in budget.
Well, sort of. But what these guys are prepared to do, these guys – so we – don't take from this example that people only go work for the mm-hmm. county. We have people that work for oil companies, right, in terms of doing inspection, make sure the pipes are clean and tight. Mm-hmm. They don't care if there's regulations or not. They don't want to lose their oil. They don't want to necessarily kill these critters on the ground. So there's those types of jobs. There's a huge amount of jobs in new emerging fields that aren't necessarily what you would assume are the environment. So again, a lot of our students are going up now to work in the robotics industry, either in the underwater robotic stuff, ROVs, in mostly San Diego, or more and more of our students are going up to San Francisco, where they're pulling in, you know, nice salaries doing using drones and the robotic skills that they've learned in our labs to help companies grow and to do things like respond to disasters and emergencies and things like that. So these guys are really well grounded, and they can work in a lot of different industries. It's not as if we're training them to only be biologists and only do these plans. These guys are but one small example of what they can do.
In fact, I'm sorry if I sound like I was picking on you, because right now it's tough for lawyers to get jobs. you have many more opportunities.
Well, I would say real quick. So we have about more than 90% of our folks, when they graduate, within some of them take the summer off, but within a few months are employed. And that compares to 50-40% of my previous departments at UCLA and other places, because these guys have practical skills throughout all the classes, throughout all their experiences. They're learning all this stuff, not just theory. They're learning how to do marketable things.
Amanda Shepard and Andy Sperker, thank you so much, and best on your future. Dr. Sean Anderson, it's always great to have you here. You're always welcome. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. We'll be back next week.
Thank you.